This is an AI-generated summary of Hansard for Thursday, 30th May, 1901. The House of Representatives. The debate on the Governor-General's speech resumed on the 30th of May. Thomas MacDonald Paterson, representing Brisbane, criticised Queensland's lack of representation at the second constitutional convention. He argued that Queensland's sugar industry had suffered compared to Western Australia, which secured vital concessions through representation. MacDonald Paterson stressed that broad views were needed for the benefit of the entire Commonwealth and called for an interstate commission to harmonise railway freight rates and end beggar my neighbour practices. Charles MacDonald, representing Kennedy for the Australian Labour Party, interjected that Queensland was following a similar course, while Alfred Conroy mentioned that Melbourne trade was being driven away. In response, James Mackay remarked, "We do not call other people stupid." MacDonald Paterson proposed a 5-member commission for state representation, but MacDonald pointed out that there were 6 states. He then expressed concern that railway authorities were charging rates below the actual cost of haulage, describing it as robbery and thriftlessness. On the matter of the federal capital site, he opposed a remote position and instead favoured a coastal location easily accessible by modern transport, citing his preference for a warm climate. He defended both Queensland and Victoria against external criticism, highlighting the contributions of Victorians to Queensland's development. The discussion turned to immigration. Paterson supported restricting Asiatic immigration and gradually abolishing South Sea Islander labour, while questioning the negative portrayal of Kanaka labour, which he argued benefited interstate trade. In a heated exchange, he questioned why white men had not replaced Kanaka labour, citing evidence from the Darling Downs Commission that planters preferred hiring white workers. He dismissed the politically motivated demand for a white Australia, remarking that real progress lay in focusing on major commercial centres like Little Bourke Street in Melbourne and Lower George Street in Sydney. Andrew Fisher noted that a royal commission would ultimately decide the issue. Paterson then moved on to fiscal matters, urging the government to obtain current, comprehensive information on labour issues and to promptly address the tariff. He recommended setting tariff commencement on the 1st July under a half-yearly cycle, or deferring the matter until the next session to mitigate adverse effects on the merchants. He discussed the influence of the American tariff, the financial exigencies of the states, and the tension between free trade and protectionist policies. He declared that free trade means no customs house at all. Regarding the post office, he advocated an initial trial period of a few years before revising postal rates, and he sharply criticised the proposal for a great interstate railway as fatuous folly. Alexander Poynton and John Forrest challenged his view, with Forrest explaining that state construction of the railway would facilitate earlier mail deliveries. MacDonald Paterson also stressed the importance of establishing the Federal High Court as soon as possible. In concluding his remarks, he thanked the honourable members for their attention. Vaben L. Solomon, representing South Australia, then congratulated the movers and seconders of the address in reply and the speaker. Solomon discussed the proper definition of a revenue tariff versus protection, and noted that, up to a point, there was little difference between the policies of the Barton government and those of free traders. He criticised the Prime Minister's ambiguous stance. While supporting continued protection for the sugar industry, the Prime Minister had not mentioned the excise duty on colonially grown sugar. When questioned by Thomas Ewing about imposing an excise on wine, Solomon deferred his response, stating that the issues of import and export duties were interlinked. James Mackay reminded the House that the Constitution required these duties to be separated. John Forrest raised the subject of sugar policies in Western Australia. Although the Prime Minister's policy did not call for an export duty on sugar, Forrest stressed the necessity of imposing excise duties on both sugar and colonial wines, warning against heavy excise burdens. In a light-hearted remark, he quipped about not having a free breakfast for wine. He maintained that it was essential to have mechanisms in place to impose duties immediately upon the introduction of resolutions, even if the actual payments were delayed until after the tariff was passed. The debate then shifted to the appointment of the High Court of Australia, drawing a parallel with the Court of Appeal in England, which is constituted by judges from other courts. Forrest argued that the High Court would have a broader role than merely functioning as a court of appeal. He expressed regret that a member for Northern Melbourne had suggested that the Interstate Commission would have little work to do when established. Issues concerning state rights and financial responsibilities emerged as New South Wales was questioned about claims over traffic developed by South Australia. Disputes arose over revenue allocated under Section 65 of the Commonwealth Constitution, leading to a vigorous exchange touching on federal public service appointments and the viability of a federal territory. South Australia's limited revenue and financial position were highlighted, along with discussions on a proposed railway to Western Australia and estimates of associated costs. Arguments ensued about port developments and the federal parliament's obligation to address South Australia's needs promptly. James McColl, representing Echuca, then addressed the House, congratulating it on the respectful tone of the speeches and warning against carping criticism. He acknowledged the heavy responsibilities borne by the Commonwealth Ministry and urged all members to offer hearty, generative support. McColl praised the honest speech delivered by His Excellency the Governor-General and touched on major matters concerning the management of great rivers and water resources, central issues for both Victoria and South Australia. He also stressed the need for a coordinated response to challenges faced by agricultural interests in production, exportation, and the sale of produce in traditional markets. Further interjections touched on local concerns, such as the loss of life in certain regions and the development of public works. Fiscal accountability was also a major theme. One speaker recalled the meticulous scrutiny of New South Wales loan monies and stressed the necessity for safe, non-partisan individuals to manage the Commonwealth's finances, a sentiment met with counter-statements regarding experiences under free trade policies. Henry Willis, representing Robertson, delivered his first address, advocating for the extension of the franchise to all adult subjects within the Commonwealth, citing the successful exercise of voting rights by women in New Zealand and South Australia. He expressed confidence that broader participation in other states would yield similarly satisfactory outcomes. He pledged his support for franchise extension on behalf of South Australia and the government, emphasizing the significance of forthcoming reports on the interior that would validate the need for expanded public works and infrastructure to stimulate regional development. After a vigorous debate covering representation, tariff policy, immigration, fiscal responsibility, infrastructural development, and electoral reform, Mr. Deakin moved that the House, at its rising, adjourn until tomorrow at 2 o'clock p.m. The House adjourned at 11:51 p.m. The Senate. Senator Anderson Dawson of Queensland, representing the Australian Labor Party, opened the debate on the address in reply by stating that the amendment regarding Kanaka labour was practically withdrawn, remarking that its parents have practically bolted. He criticised the focus on fiscal matters and argued that more urgent issues needed addressing. He questioned the essential difference between the government's protectionist scheme and the opposition's revenue tariff proposals, suggesting that both aimed to raise the same funds. When Senator David Charleston asked for clarification on the meaning of a revenue tariff, Dawson replied that the debate was not one of principle, but one of expediency, cautioning against tariffs that might benefit some states while harming others, as in Queensland, where producing industries could suffer from taxes on machinery. Drawing on his personal experience as a miner, Dawson asserted that Victoria was not synonymous with Australia and contended that protective tariffs had damaged the development of Queensland goldfields. He advocated for free access to essential machinery for primary industries and, later in his speech, digressed to discuss the need for women to be trained in self-defence. Turning to the subject of labour, he questioned the sincerity of the Kanaka Labour Amendment, arguing that the focus should be on abolishing all aliens rather than targeting Kanakas specifically. When Senator Charleston maintained that Kanaka issues were the pressing concern in Queensland, Dawson countered that opposition to a white Australia was rallying public support, a point later confirmed by Senator James Drake. Dawson affirmed that the Australian Labour Party aimed to protect the sugar industry and deal generously with those involved, but only within the framework of a white Australia. He described Kanakas as a danger to working men, citing a history of criminality, and warned that tariffs and policies needed to consider both financial and moral implications, a point not everyone agreed with, as Senator Norman Ewing suggested that Dawson was sacrificing moral concerns for financial ones. Dawson also noted the increasing presence of Chinese labour in Port Darwin and in Little Bourke Street, Melbourne, using the latter as an example to highlight regional differences. He warned that foreign complications might arise from engaging with coloured aliens, emphasising a distinction between Kanakas and other coloured aliens. Senator James Stewart even asked whether Dawson had observed the Chinese processions himself. Senator John Clemens of Tasmania then spoke, declaring his duty to advise the leader of the government on the support or opposition to the proposals outlined in the Governor-General's speech. Clemens discussed immigration and rejected the use of arbitrary tests, such as educational requirements, to judge immigrants. In addressing a proposed railway project, he noted that no one had argued the Commonwealth should build it solely because it would be a paying concern. Throughout his remarks, Clemens conveyed his chief objection to protectionism, arguing that it represented misguided state interference. He warned that if the Commonwealth adopted protection, it could be an enduring impediment. In a notable statement, he observed, "Neither free trade, whose cause I am advocating, nor protection, which my honourable friends opposite support, is an absolute remedy. Both sides will have to hope that the energy and intelligence of this new Commonwealth of Australia will contribute far more to our success and prosperity than any tariff we might devise." Senator David Charleston of South Australia declared himself a state rights advocate, insisting that the federal parliament should take control of large territories such as the Northern Territory. When asked how such control would be implemented, and when Senator Thomas Glassy of Queensland and Senator Sir William Zeal raised related issues, Charleston outlined his belief in maintaining state rights without relying on a large permanent military force. He also spoke about the responsibility of the state to support older citizens who had contributed to its wealth. At one point, Dawson retorted with a remark about leaving a surplus for increased payments to members, adding a sardonic comment about taxing boots that would result in glass bottles strewn along the roadway. Charleston went on to highlight the merits of a free trade policy similar to that of Great Britain, quoting Earl Grey on the subject. Dawson interjected, suggesting that England, as a natural manufacturing country, was taxing raw materials. Charleston promptly questioned whether England was significantly different from its past. The debate then shifted to social conditions. Senator Charleston emphasized the need to protect Australia from degrading and immoral conditions found elsewhere, and to preserve its high social character, a point that prompted a query from Senator William Higgs regarding whether the quote was from George Reed. Senator Thomas Glassy then directed the discussion toward the sugarcane industry, asserting that only white labour should be employed. Citing the example of the Milliken Mill in Queensland, he questioned whether white men could endure the harsh conditions in northern Queensland's sugar fields. Dawson sharply retorted, stating, "It will be a bad day for the white man when he is no better than the nigger," and added, "It is pure murder." Glassy replied by providing figures on Kanaka labour in Queensland over the past 10 years, noting that their numbers had remained steady, and he proceeded to build a case for a white Australia, albeit with careful consideration for current industry participants. Sir Josiah Simon then inquired whether the death rate among white workers might be significantly lower. Other senators, including Senator Hugh De Largie, Senator Playford, and Senator Harney, contributed brief remarks on the subject of protection and revenue. Senator David O'Keefe of Tasmania commented on the situation of navigation and on seamen who constituted a large portion of Australia's workforce, arguing that they should not be disfranchised simply because they were away from port during elections. O'Keefe also discussed the issue of Kanaka labour from his extensive experience in northern Queensland. Despite an interjection from Senator Matheson cautioning against straying from the central question, O'Keefe made clear his position on restricting Kanaka labour for both social and moral reasons, and his remarks were supported by references to state laws in New South Wales and South Australia. Finally, Senator O'Connor of New South Wales moved to withdraw the Service and Execution of Process Bill with the intent to introduce a new version. The debate highlighted deep divisions over fiscal policy, protectionism versus free trade, immigration and labour practices. While notable quotes, such as Senator Clemens's observation on trade policies, punctuated the discussion, the discussions overall reflected the complexity and passion underlying the formation of policy in the new Commonwealth of Australia. This has been a LaunchLab production. LaunchLab.com.au